This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from One Green World, a nursery located near Molalla, Oregon, offering hard-to-find plants designed to help you grow your own fruit and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. For a color catalog, the number there is 503-651-3005, and the email address is catalog@onegreenworld.com.
Well, we have reached the second Monday of the month. I'm here, Glenn Andreessen. This is the Dirtbag. Welcome. Today, all the way from Salem. All right, kind of all the way from Salem. Tom Goodwin with Oregon Tilth. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning.
We will be talking about Oregon Tilth and certification programs for... we're even going to cover apiaries here, or at least a little bit. Dairies, farms... I don't know that we'll be able to touch on home gardens.
We'll see.
Okay. In any event, I first want to mention, though, an opportunity to view my garden. You've heard for years about me blathering on and on about what I do. And here's yet again another opportunity to take a look at the garden. The Metro Tour is happening once again this year. I am on it once again this year. The tour is free. It is July 16th. It's a Sunday self-guided tour from 10 to 4. There are 28 gardens on the tour. A couple of weeks, two or three weeks ahead of time, you'll get in the mail a tour booklet where you can find the addresses and all about the gardens, and then you can choose which gardens you go to. Of course, nobody can go to 28 gardens. Most people, I would suspect, visit 4 to 6 gardens. Depending on what their interests are. If you have an interest in vegetable gardening or fruit gardening, then mine is one of several that specialize in that. If you want to keep chickens, I think there are 5 gardens on the tour that do have chickens. If you want to keep or learn about bees, there are a couple of gardens to do that too. So, it is a free tour, but you have to register through Metro. The Metro Recycling Information Number, 503-234-3000. And there are several hundred spots left out of 2,500. So the spaces are going quickly. 234-3000. That's the Metro number. We may get to call in here later on, but Tom's got lots of information, and we'll get to that now. This all came about, this being Tom's guest appearance here on the Dirtbag, when I talked to another member of Oregon Tilth about certain prohibited materials and certain allowed materials.
Mm-hmm.
Or
the national list. The national list of...
See, Tom knows what I'm saying.
The national list of prohibited materials or synthetic materials that are allowed for use in organic agriculture.
Yes.
And then there's also... non-synthetic materials that are prohibited for use in organic agriculture.
Right, that's exactly it. I was writing a couple of articles for the Alliance on slug bait, the iron phosphate-based mm-hmm. slug baits, and, well, you know, it's a naturally occurring material. Is it organic? Can it be used in organic gardens? And the answer I found surprisingly was no.
No. It's actually allowed. Iron phosphate is actually allowed for in the European agricultural standards. It's one of those materials that I think because of our climate, Oregon being more similar to some parts of Europe, it wasn't as a high priority. I imagine that if you could find a naturally mined source, though, of iron phosphate, I don't know exactly the production method of iron phosphate, naturally mined materials are allowed for use in organic agriculture. So,
and the material that we generally use then is somehow manufactured or...
Yeah, it might be. It may be a byproduct of some other sort of manufacturing process. A lot of your synthetic materials, anyway, are byproducts of another production, and then they find a use.
Well, I went to the source, that's Oregon Tilth, and talked with a colleague of Tom's, John, and who I asked if he'd be interested in coming on to the show, the Dirtbag, and he said, yes, but I'm busy, but maybe somebody else would be, and Tom was...
The lucky fortune of being able to come down to KB this morning.
That's right. And so tell us maybe just a little bit about Oregon Tilth briefly, and then your position.
Okay, well, Oregon Tilth came about from the Tilth organization. It was founded in the 1970s, early 70s, and it was founded to support sustainable agriculture. And through many twists and turns of the series of events, it began to do organic certification in the early 80s. At that point, even the beginnings of the organic movement in the U.S., there was that concern about greenwashing and companies people saying that their products were organic and not having any sort of verification method to check that. And then, certification bodies grew and developed, and every group throughout the U.S., people were enforcing different standards with different logos using the organic. And in 2002, the USDA National Organic Program was established, basically creating one national standard for all things that are organic, and so that a label that says organic here in Oregon, certified by us, or a label by any other certification body, has the same meaning and weight. And that's really what's allowed the organic movement to grow and flourish. It comes with its own, set of difficulties as well,
Sure.
Especially when you start trying to hound down regulations and, what does this word mean? People are debating the meaning of different phrases in the National Organic Program as much as they might debate what different sections of the Bible mean. So,
right. Or the Constitution.
The Constitution, for that matter, yeah. Whenever you have a document, people can interpret words differently. But for the most part, I think that it's really great, and, it's kind of in adolescence as the certifiers are improving and people are trying to nail down what the different sections of the National Organic Program mean, and there are different interpretations, But
so the Oregon Tilth then is one of a handful of certifiers in the United States.
Than a handful, but we're probably one of the top five as far as numbers. Other big ones that people see are CCOF. That's the California Coalition of Organic Farmers, QAI, Washington State Department of Agriculture does organic certification as well. You'll find different models. Oregon Tilth is a nonprofit. There are some certifiers out there that are for-profits. There are some that are run by the state agricultural agencies.
I see. So okay, that's good. And so what is your position there?
Well, I'm the farm program coordinator at Oregon Tilth. So I work with about 500 operations throughout the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Central and South America, and basically try to make sure that we go through our annual process. Every year, every farm that we certify has an organic management plan. They submit that before they can certify. And you have to make sure that that organic management plan is more or less set to, that they are certifiable. You want to see, okay, the land history shows that they've been free of prohibited material for 3 years. These are the materials they're using, et cetera. So basically I review those and do correspondence with them. And then the certification process, we send out an inspector that verifies that the organic management plan that has been submitted is the plan that's actually in place. The inspector writes up a report that gets submitted to us and is reviewed by John Stolle, the person that was going to be here. But it gets reviewed, and if there are any areas where the organic management plan doesn't quite fit compliance, or even if there are any modifications that need to be made. I mean, there are so many different operations out there, and there's so many different decisions that have to be made that, you know, the verification program isn't about throwing somebody out because they didn't keep, you know, they need to make an improvement on their record system, or there was a material that was okay, but, you know, what are these inerts in this material, stuff like that. A continual improvement, continuing to make the farm have higher and higher integrity as far as the product, eliminating potential contamination sites, et cetera. So anyway, the review goes through, and then we have a committee that reviews each of those decisions that the reviewer made, and then the farm is able to, if points of noncompliance are issued, the farm or operation has that an opportunity to fully address each of those points before we would issue certification. And then subsequently, every year, the farm has to update their management plan, you know, with any changes that they make. And they have an annual inspection. So keep on going through that cycle. And then 5% of our farms every year may have a surprise inspection as well.
Cool.
So.
Do the farms have to pay every year?
Yeah.
And I mean, not as much as the initial.
Yeah, the first year our fees are a little bit higher, and then subsequently they're less. Our fee schedule is based off of the gross income that the farm makes, so it scales in reason with how well the farm is doing itself. And there are other programs out there. The Oregon Department of Agriculture actually has a cost share program in place to help farms be able to afford certification. Generally, like a small farm operation, their first year certification with us would be $399, I believe, is there. And then subsequently after that is $200 some. And the program that the Department of Agriculture has that received money from the USDA can reimburse the farm 3/4 of their cost of certification, up to $500. So really, it's not big an economic concern.
Right, that shouldn't be a barrier to if somebody was interested in that. Okay, yeah. So that's kind of some good background information, and particularly on farms. I just had a question about the apiculture, bee farms, if you will. I mentioned to you that I keep honeybees, and
well, the apiculture is interesting. As I mentioned before the show, there's no specific language in the National Organic Program that describes apiculture. There has been guidance given by the USDA. Basically, a lot of certifiers before the USDA came in place did have standards set for apiculture. The short description, I guess, is that the USDA said, go ahead, you can continue to certify those using the National Organic Standards as your guide. But, with apiculture, with these standards, you want to look at all of the potential pollen sources, all of the forage area of the bees. So we want to look at a range of up to 5 miles around the hive, which look at each of the pollen and nectar sources throughout that area. So that's why it tends to have farms that could produce organic honey are somewhat more isolated.
Yeah, I guess.
It's not outside of reason to be able to do it, though, because you want to identify the conventional sources of pollen, and if there are any within that region, you would want to have a more attractive source of pollen or nectar during that's in production or in flower at the same period of time.
Well, I can understand that. I know I don't want to get bogged down on beekeeping because, boy, I could spend hours talking about that. But just knowing the habits of the bees, you know, anybody that keeps bees in the city or even on the outskirts of the city, you just wouldn't qualify because you would have, there's, you know, within 5 miles,
within
300 feet, I'm sure there's somebody that uses some kind of a pesticide
I think that's,
on their fruit trees.
And that's why I think that there isn't that much production of organic honey right now. Although with
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think that that's why there isn't that much production of organic honey. But I think that, you know, local is also very important, specifically with honey production.
Good point.
And when you're thinking about your honey, you have to think about what the local allergens are. And there's been studies that show that if you have honey that's produced from the area that you're living, you can you have more resistant to the local pollens.
Well, there's last question here on bees in or comment then. You know, maybe there's an interim certification of, or could be, or in an ideal world of, well, we're not using anything toxic in the colonies themselves, because that's a big source of contaminants.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest concern, I think.
Yeah, and I think that there are, the National Organic Standards Board came up with a recommendation. That would be part of the certification of apiculture, would be the materials that you're using for management of the hive itself. And I don't know, you could probably be able to say that it is managed without prohibited materials or something. Yeah, that foraging area, though, does seem to be the...
Yeah, and I've read some of the other qualifications of the equipment. It has to be sanitized in, you know, X manner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's enough with that. Let's move on to dairies.
Dairies
was an interesting rule change here.
It's an exciting time for organic dairies right now because the rule change has come down from the U.S., from the USDA. This was all started off with Arthur Harvey, who sued the USDA because there was disagreements between the language of the National Organic Program that came out in 2002 and the Organic Foods Production Act of 1990, which was laying the groundwork for the NOP. So he sued over those differences. He had multiple points in federal court in January of 2005. He won on three of those points. And in talking about dairies, the point that he won was that the Organic Foods Production Act said that dairies had to be managed with 100% organic for 1 year before production. The NOP put in a provision, to assist dairies to convert over to organic status. And they allowed for the use of, for the first 9 months, use of 80% organic feed, or including pasture, 20% conventional or undocumented or undocumentable feed, or transitional feed, et cetera, et cetera. Just the cost for a dairy to convert to organic status is prohibitively high, almost. When you think about the fact that they have to be managing them organically, but they're still getting conventional prices during that year transition period.
And just to give me and our listeners some context here, what kind of a percentage premium could they charge more for when it's certified organic?
Well, I don't track the prices very closely, but it is.
But that's why many of them will go to that.
It is significant, and it's increasing as well. Conventional dairy prices are going down a lot, and so you do have a lot more dairies, small farming. I was out in a conference in Wisconsin, I think last year, and a dairyman told me you either have to go big in your conventional practices, expand, have more cows, get out, you know, sell your farm, or go organic. And that's the only way that he said that small dairy farms were going to be able to continue producing. And
okay.
I think that's true to a lot of degrees. But there was that there's that prohibitive cost in being able
okay,
to
so this,
transition.
Okay, so now you can continue. Sorry to...
Yeah, so anyway, much back and forth. He won the case then. Some people may recall that the Congress amended the OFPA, that original Organic Foods Production Act of 1990. They modified it to basically work out some of those discrepancies that Harvey had based his lawsuit. And they also... allowed, and now the USDA has the language that's allowing the 80-20 rule is no longer. It's met its final days. The dairies that are converting, that are using the 80-20, have already started using the 80-20, and they'll be allowed to finish out using that conversion plan. But now the new plan that's in place for converting your dairy is you have to have it managed 100% organic for one full year, your herd. So 100% of their feed has to be organic. But they did put in a provision to also address the cost. And it's actually it's very similar, I think, almost identical to the European regulation at this point. Mm-hmm. Because before using the 80-20, your pasture had to be free of prohibited materials, you know, mostly your synthetic fertilizers or pesticides, for 3 years. For 3 years, and then you could use that pasture as part of their organic feed. Now, so your land had to be certified organic, and then you could go for a year using the 80-20 to convert your herd to organic. Now, the land has to be free of prohibited materials for 2 years, and then you can begin your conversion of your herd to organic using 100% feed and this transitional or 3 year transitional land. And so that will allow you to use transitional feed, and your land and your herd would reach organic status at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's an exciting time because, you know, whenever you change the rules of the game, it's going to benefit some people, it's going to hurt sure. other people. And so I think a lot of the operations that wanted to be able to benefit, you know, there were a lot of farms that were essentially organic already. You know, they weren't using fertilizers yeah. and pesticides on their fields. That the new rule doesn't give them any advantage because their land may have been free of prohibited materials for years and years and years and years. So those operations are the ones that come in now, take advantage of the 80-20 or took advantage of it towards the end and while they could. You know, they were essentially organic already. And they made that decision to be able to go, okay, we're going to go for it. And there is always going to be a little bit of resistance because it's changing your whole management plan is a huge decision to make.
I guess. Well, how many, do you know how many certified organic dairies are in Oregon?
In the state of Oregon? Let's see, I wish if I had my database in front of me, I'd rip it out. I think that Oregon Till certifies about 80 dairies. But that's US-wide.
Okay.
I think in the state of Oregon, we probably have upwards of 30 or so.
Okay. And some may be certified by another.
Oh yeah, of course. Too, right? Oregon Till does certify most of the farms in the state of Oregon, but Washington State Department of Agriculture certifies some. QAI certifies some farms here.
I see.
And some other mom and pop certifying bodies will also be working in the state.
Hmm. Well, we've got 5 minutes. If somebody has a burning question that they want to ask Tom, we'll open up the phones here 503-231-8187, and you can talk to Tammy. So does Oregon Till certify like chicken farms too?
We have every sort of different operation. I always get excited. One of the privileges of my job is that I get to type up the certificates themselves. And so every so often I'll see crops on certificates. I'm like, what is that? I've never even heard of that crop before. But yeah, we have chickens, we have turkeys. We even have an operation that has organic reindeer. They're up in Alaska, but and every single, you know, goat milk, sheep, We just started doing organic certification of clothing, of fabric now.
Oh.
And so that's exciting. That's a new program using some using a set standard different than the USDA NOP standard, because that's for food.
Yeah.
But just bringing on and being able to have that same quality assurance for any sort of fiber that somebody wants to know, that they can verify that that's been produced in an organic management system from the farm through the processing of the material.
Well, the more the merrier, the more the better, as far as certification goes. So what is the what's the penalty, if that's the right word, for someone who would claim on their product that it's organic and it's not certified? Or
well, I would have to establish first that there are some exclusions from organic certification. So there are some cases where you can use the term organic, but you don't have to be certified. Primarily, since we're talking about farms, if you're a farmer or if you do gardening and you manage your farm organically, you keep the records to show it, but you earn less than $5,000 annually, you don't have to go to the expense of certifying your operation and spending a couple $100 to certify yourself, and you know you're only making $5,000.
And to clarify, and so you could say on your label organic, or would you have to say?
Well, you could say I think you can label a product as organic, or you could sell it like at a farm stand and say it was organic. You can't say it's certified organic if it's not. And you can't use it in processed goods that you sell to another processor to make. There are definitely operations that make less than $5,000 that do certify themselves as organic because they might sell those products to a processor. And so to be able to sell the product at all, they have to be certified as organic. The there is a penalty for any operation that sells their product as organic that makes over $5,000. And I think it's I'd have to check the language. I don't have my rule book in front of me, but I think it's $20,000per violation of the organic standards. But I think a lot of the times you've got all of the certifiers and a lot of farms and everybody that's paying close attention to products that are out and products that make claim. And so I think for the most part, people stop making an organic claim before the acts, that penalty comes down on them. Because, you know, like, oh, we'll stop.
Yeah. And so there have been some violations of that.
There have been violations of that. There have been investigations by the USDA into those violations. But generally, you know, the public is able to catch those. And sometimes if they were making a claim.
Or other producers.
Yeah, other producers, their competition, you know.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You want to be monitoring what your competition is doing. And
so would you say then that it successful?
Yeah, or? I think it is successful.
And the people can be confident when they see organic on the label?
I think that people can be very confident when they see organic on their product. There's different things that they might want to look at as far as their label. They may want to look at who the... I think that all certifier bodies apply the same standards. I'm very proud of Oregon Tilth's work, so I'd feel happy if people wanted to check the labels of their product and saw that it was certified Oregon Tilth. Then I can even feel more confident.
So
I guess
worth the extra premium.
Oh yeah,
you pay for that.
I think so. But yeah, any product that has a organic claim and it says it's certified organic by X certifier, you can have complete confidence in that product.
Okay, Tom, that's the final word.
All right.
Tom Goodwin from Oregon Tilth. This is Glenn Andreessen. I'll be back in a month. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Be well.
for the final hour of the Radio Zine for this morning. We have Democracy Now! Coming right up with Amy Goodman.